David sharing in our contemporary guest room, and Laura's doing the collective Christmas window, which is going to open on the 22nd for 2 weeks while the galleries are shut.
Okay, well, I'll just briefly click through a few things on the website just so you have a rough idea of what I do. This, you obviously have seen Cloudmaker, that's a 2009 piece. These works are 2010. I'll just quickly run through a few documentation of them. This is called Particle Accelerator. It uses a number of metal pipes, copper, brass, aluminium, and some concrete that I cast as a hard surface to vibrate. But there's a lot of sound elements in my works, and my interest in sound lies with, I suppose, trying to make visible or investigate the physicality of sound and its vibration quality. So I look at materials and resonate them to certain degrees. There's a little sort of kid's bear, plastic bear, a Fisher-Price bear that sort of bounces like this, and I just took it apart and just did a motor inside the vibrate. So it's just underneath the blanket. And, yeah, I suppose at this point it's fair to say that I use a lot of found objects and materials and everyday objects and sort of examine their function and what they sort of are maybe designed or made to do, and maybe try and think around that and what else they can do other than what they were designed for, and build relationships between various objects that might necessarily be their normal everyday use. So, and then somewhere in the middle insert some sound investigations. Passive Upright, currently in an exhibition in London. From this it's hard to tell, but the blue sort of speck is actually a motor that's clamped to the rod, and there's a piece of red paper in between, and the vibrations of the motor just resonates the paper ever so slightly, and it creates, it sort of falls or drips, and there's a little pocket of sound just in the middle, so it basically turns the paper into a speaker device.
It's quite interesting though, because these things all have a function, or they're reduced down to exactly what you need and no more, but then there's red paper and there's a blue clamp, and then there's this, so there's real decisions about every single element, the found object, and then there's the constructed one, because we were just talking about the wooden structure, that's a kind of choice, that it's not too heavy to be really sort of industrial, it's not too light to fall over, but it's just enough to hold the bottle.
There's definitely choices. I'm interested in function and functionality and use and uselessness, but aesthetics come into it, and you definitely make choices in what materials you use, and even in terms of their sort of place, like their archival sort of sense of in place in history and stuff. So you have to, with that one in particular, it was sort of choice of trying to create something light and formal in a way that gave the sort of found objects or everyday objects more of a shape and form to it. So yeah,
because that one, when I look at that and I'm only seeing an image, then it becomes a flag, and then I start thinking of what kind of flag that might be, you know, they then become other objects because they look like something else.
Yeah.
Even though it's a piece of paper,
yeah.
You know, and I quite like, it's almost like there's another language on top of these words, that it's this looping effect, but then it goes beyond that. It takes you somewhere else.
Well, I think that's sort of core of the work, where I'm looking at how things were intended for, their use and their function, and possibly seen as useless objects in an everyday sense, but to actually sort of relate them and make them work together to do something else is something I'm interested in. So we were just laughing earlier because Laura's going to...
The foil fetish we have.
This is a piece I made for an exhibition in Toronto earlier this year. The drawer, it's just a sort of regular drawer, that has a nice little groove where it slides in and out. But that hook, I thought, was a nice place to put a roll of tinfoil and just drape it over the side. And the fan sort of goes in underneath it and fills sort of space of the drawer with air, and it just gently flows. That's another piece of the background.
I think also it's like both our works, they kind of, obviously they're sculptures and they're objects in those, but they take you straight back into the world of objects. So when you look at your work, and I like to think my work does a similar thing, that actually what it does, it takes you back into where you see things like that in the world. You know, where you see things moving, or you see machines doing something that you don't recognise. And that's, you know, the fact it's tin foil and it's a fan, they're all things that we understand. But by putting together in a slightly different way, it's it's a new thing, but it does remind us of so many other things that we come across.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's, yeah, when you use something from the everyday, you automatically sort of draw on that sort of material, reference material. So, but yeah, it is that sense of revealing something else within the, either about material itself, materiality, or its use or its function in its intended use. So, trying to reveal something else. And I think with something like Cloudmaker, it's trying to sort of investigate maybe existential ideas of how things are made or why we're here, and just think of sort of slightly bigger ideas by using everyday materials. So the scale and sort of intimate sort of human scale is really important, and sort of maybe thinking about these grander ideas. They're not huge scientific projects, they're a big budget behind them, they're quite small sort of kitchen table type scientist projects. So yeah. That's really important, I think, in the work. So,
but it really works for what I was saying about the kind of, it's a small thing that's happening, but it has such a big implication, and it uses so much of your imagination. So that when it lands on that grill at the bottom, then that becomes a cloud. But it's not really a cloud; it's a little bit of steam, but it's a cloud in my head. It's a cloud.
It's just an illusion of a cloud, really.
But it touches on very large, quite big issues. You know, from such a small thing.
Yeah. Do you want to show your stuff?
Unless you want to show me more, I'm enjoying your work. Do they always move? Is there anything? Do you ever make things that don't move?
I do occasionally. I just like electricity. I like things to plug in. I like its sort of relationship and what electricity does and the sort of world that's full of electricity and electromagnetism, sort of electromagnetic spectrum, and I try to sort of use that really in a way.
But also that thing you were saying upstairs about when you see something moving, it kind of mesmerises you and keeps you there in a duration that then you give the space and time for the viewer to go to other places with it, because it has durational, but it's simple, so you don't...
There's a pace and time in the sort of, a lot of the works, they're quite repetitive, and a lot of them use cycles in ways, and it is... It's to allow you to sort of that time and space to actually sort of meditate in a way, to actually think about the piece itself and allow you to think of something bigger. And the idea of using machines, and there is sort of an investigation of time in a sort of technological sort of sense as well, and human sort of progress. So the devices that I use can sometimes be seen as sort of retro or something, but it's not really a stylized thing, it's more to do with looking at technology and sort of evolution of sort of human machines. And I'll show you this because this is my 70s record player. I did this, I was on residency in the Mattress Factory in Pittsburgh, March, April, May of this year, and it's an amazing place, really amazing. Their sort of philosophy is anything is impossible, or nothing's impossible. So they make anything you want happen, basically. So as an artist, it was a really brilliant opportunity, but I think I sort of confused them because I wasn't really that monumental artist that America's sort of full of. They get things done, they just go, what you want done, we'll make it. We'll get you, and that's amazing because they will do it. They'll find someone. I don't know if it's the same here, but in Ireland, if you go to a hardware shop or a fabricator and you want something strange that they don't normally make, they'll just sort of, no, we don't do that. But in America, they're like, okay, we'll find a way of making it happen. So yeah, my way of working was sort of strange for them at first, but yeah, I got into it, and I quite liked that piece. Pittsburgh as a place, there's a lot of things, well, they blow their own trumpet a lot as well, but there's a lot of things sort of discovered in terms of technology. There's a lot of things created there. So oil was a big thing in the early sort of settler days. There's oil fields and sand fields, so I decided to do this oil piece. It's just used motor oil from a garage. The ping pong ball just stays in the centre, creates a sort of vortex of oil, and 78 RPM happened to be the optimum speed. Well, it was actually somewhere between 75 and 100. 100 was too fast, so 78 happened to work really well. So.
What I quite like about all these objects is that they're related to human activities that we've worked them, but they're devoid of any human relationship. So you've got these objects that just have a whole life of their own, and they just, it's like that one, it just carries on, it doesn't need us to be there.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I went to this talk the other day, which was really interesting, talking about maybe objects are more at home in the world than humans are at home in the world, that they belong better, they last longer, they go on much longer than we do, we die and they carry on. But there's something about, I don't know, these objects having their own life, that they just keep carrying on, that's kind of bigger and more than we are, almost like machines, but they're done in really slight ways, but they have this sort of power about them or something, because they're sort of, they don't need us,
well,
they don't need us at all.
Yeah, but they didn't exist, like, we made them as well, so
yeah.
Like, that sort of human element of wanting to create a machine to do an automated device that does a task that humans used to do, and now we make machines do what we no longer want to do, so that idea of machines is sort of what interests me as well.
Yeah.
Taking the human out of making something.
Yeah.
Like, taking the human out of work, really.
Especially some of the objects, because they're all things that aren't like big machines in a factory which you could just turn on and walk away. They're all things like a human would use, like you would cook on that, or you'd use a bottle. But it's quite nice, because now they have a whole, they're having a life of their own. Like, that's having a life of its own, doing something new.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah.
So, I was just thinking, because each, like Laura's saying, have sort of this life of their own and almost their own sort of system within it. And I just wonder, like, how you come to creating that sort of like assembly of objects and.
Where I start.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if there's any sort of like relationship to maybe like human systems within, maybe. Do you know, like, looking at sort of biological or. Or whether it's the objects that you find will then determine which one you go.
It's sort of somewhere in between. I collect a lot of objects. I hoard things. I'm a bit of a hoarder. So what she does is the array of stuff that I find. Sometimes I seek out particular things, like after sort of experimentation with the bucket and the oil and various disasters in the studio, throwing oil everywhere. I realised the sort of speed approximately that it would work at, so that's when I went seeking out another object, the record player, to do that particular thing. But quite often it starts, well, there's a lot of, in my research and reading, like, there might be a particular sort of physics principle or something that I want to get a better understanding of myself, so it's that physical act of actually trying to recreate it, I think, sort of learning through experience, and by doing that and trying to recreate it, it's like a personal sort of attempt and exploration of the physics itself.
So there are quite a few other sort of works in a way that come out before maybe the one that...
Yeah, there's
sort
lots of...
Almost like
yeah.
Byproducts.
There's lots of things that don't ever make it out of the studio, like any artist studio, and things that just fail miserably because I can't. But then things that I expected it to do something else and it does something completely different, and it's way more interesting than what I, well, it's like, there's no, when you start with sort of a preconceived idea of what you want to end up with, that's generally a bad idea, because you sort of know what it's going to do in the end anyway, so it's much better if you end up with something that at a point where you didn't know you'd reached. So.
I'm sure you're
saying
about this one, were you trying to, like, did it come out of, you
were
going away for the
time? Yeah, I was going away for the summer, and I had a bamboo plant in my studio, and I wanted to water it while I was away, so
that's a good system.
So I hung up quite a big drum of water and just put a hole in it, and it just dripped for 3 or 4 weeks. So and yeah, that's how it started. But also a sort of combination things, because through another conversation of I'm sort of a keen gardener, and at the time I was just had a patio with potted plants, and it was just through a conversation with another artist of this sort of tiresome pursuit of watering your plants all the time, and how it'd be great if you could just like play God and have your own miniature cloud that just hovered over your plants, you wouldn't have to water them. So that was sort of a combination of both, like, really, like the idea of making your own clouds and hovering them over your plants, somewhere in between.
Do the failures become, I know you're saying that things, sometimes other things happen that you don't intend, but when something fails, like an accident, I suppose an accident, a spillage or something, does that become an interesting work for you? Or does it all, when you say it has to work, it's almost like it has to not leak or not spill, not something.
Well, yeah, like the bucket of oil, like I wouldn't have been happy, or I wouldn't have decided to exhibit a bucket of oil spilling around in a gallery.
Why not?
I suppose there's a sort of quest for that eureka moment as well.
Yeah.
It's like it's a very sort of pure scientific sort of theme, that, and it's something that I try to recreate in the work or allow the viewer to sort of experience as well in a way, that sort of moment of.
Do you know, I just wonder about maybe the notion of failure is a bit more in it all. So, like, it's successful in the sense that it does functions, you know, in the way that a good table functions, you know, I mean, it does what you want it to do. But if it kind of loops back around and is always repeating itself, it always remains indexical to the objects it's made from, you know, it's not a cloud.
Mm.
It's just a different type of failure, isn't it? But it's maybe one that's more sort of seems to be inside of the whole.
Well, in a way, I suppose they all fail because they're really like human sort of endeavors to recreate nature and
construction, don't they? They're kind of meta, you know, like a meta narrative. So it's always going like, oh, but I am a record player, you know?
Yeah.
Or like, I am a boy underneath a blanket, or and I am a water bottle, you know?
Mm.
And then also, if the collector kind of got their electricity cut off, it wouldn't have life anymore. And if somebody didn't replace the bottle, it wouldn't have life anymore either. So it's like, you know, it's this kind of attempt at a failure and then another attempt at another failure. That trip didn't quite make it climb either.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of seems to be constantly trying to build up to something and then also question itself, you know, kind of mocking itself over. It seems like maybe that.
Yeah, well, I don't try and disguise the sort of the failures of the objects themselves either. And like, they are designed for a particular purpose, and I don't ever really try and disguise that fact or gloss over that in any sort of shiny way. But
okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you to a picture, give you an idea of the kind of thing that I'm thinking about for the window. What was quite interesting, when Jenny first asked me and I was making work out of tin foil, and there seemed to be this moment of Christmasness, of sparkliness that was coming together, because actually a project like that could be totally inappropriate and part of your practice sometimes, but it seemed to be kind of a good moment for obvious reasons. But what I tend to do, well, with this piece of work, is that I do use ready-made objects, and I'm very fascinated by the relationship we have to objects in the world and the value that we give to those objects, whether it's through objects' profile, history, materiality, and what we place on an object to value or unvalue it. And I suppose I'm quite interested in the work sort of questioning our relationship to the stuff in the world. So, for example, what I'm doing with the project here is I've been collecting over the weekend loads of cheap objects, things out of charity shops, which has been great because Edinburgh's just full of amazing charity shops. And what's quite interesting, that when I get tin foil and I pack it around an object, and then I peel it off slightly and take the object out, so it keeps the form of the object that I've put the tin foil around. And what's quite interesting, say for example, I found this kind of plastic head, which is a game of Tintin, I think it is, which I've got upstairs. Now, covering that with tin foil then becomes a sort of silverware head, which then becomes like a bust that might be something that has a more value because of its silverness, but actually it's tin foil and it's perhaps even less value than the original object. So I like these objects living in a state of slight confusion, which I think what these individual objects do. And then by placing them together, what I'm doing is I'm building these kind of decorative ornamental objects. And I've been quite interested, I'll just show you, I recently did an exhibition. I'm quite interested in the idea of what makes an object an art object, in the sense that if an object isn't a functional object, but it's an object of display and it's not a sculpture, then what could it be? A table centrepiece, an ornament. So I'm quite interested in the kind of the language of objects. And this piece of work that I did recently, I've been making sort of, I suppose these were of size of centrepieces that might be on a table. And I often mix things that I've totally made, things that I've found and partly manipulated. And I'm quite interested in just ideas of decoration, or the idea of style, or the kind of stuff that we might have. of an object to display that's not a sculpture, even though these are sculptures, because I'm an artist. So I'm kind of interested in what I do with that, and often use quite ephemeral materials. So this is just masking tape stuck to a bowl that I bought on eBay, and I quite like the kind of confusion of its value, and also, you know, that in the work there's actually some silverware that I've bought next to things that are kind of very like tinfoil bowls, etc. There's some kind of look like they might be almost like an altarpiece, you know, there's sort of an idea of something being held up that might be, you know, like a relic or something. But I'm just kind of interested in what those objects do, and often the work is kind of usually ignited by an arrangement, and often the arrangements are quite sort of formal ones. So the way I put these objects together was in relationship to colour. So it started one end up being white and silver and became blue and black, and then, so actually I quite like combining ideas of sort of representation of meaning with very formal issues combined together. Just to give you another idea of a piece that I did recently was where I made a series of small objects which are kind of, I suppose, ornaments. So again, this idea of are they ornaments before they're sculptures? And of course, they're art objects as well. But and all these things are made of very low, kind of crappy stuff. So this is like a broken, I think a glass thing that was put around a lamp, and it's sitting on a plastic glass. And then I painted the edges with enamel paint, but it's dripped. And then the thing inside is lots of those really cheap jewellery that you get from £1 shops and pins. So they have the look of this kind of pretty object, or this ornament object, but they're quite crappy as well. So
I suppose really it's transforming something quite made of pure quality stuff into something precious and ornamental, as you said before. So that's
and
sort
I quite
of
idea
chains of
respect. Yeah, and I quite like that idea of the look of something, the idea of the appearance of something, because I'm very aware in people's own homes, everyone has these objects of some sort. They're either a gift from somebody that you don't throw away because someone gave it to you and you don't throw it away because it's a friend, or it's you know, something that you bought in a charity shop. And so you have these kind of objects that in people's homes that have this arrangement. I'm quite interested in arrangements of how people put things onto the TVs,
like,
and stuff.
Just in your sort of choice of display in the way that you that is obviously a decision you make. It's
absolutely
sort of replicating a ornamental display at home, is it?
And also it's quite difficult because often with bigger objects, then I mean, I think when you work with sculpture, the biggest problem is where the thing sits on or what things get placed on because of gravity. And so it took me ages to come up with how these objects were going to be displayed, so I've ended up with something that's that I've constructed, which somehow is partly domestic in that it's almost like a kitchen unit, the height of a kitchen unit, but it has the makeshift qualities of the objects. So the edging is done out of that foam that you put insulate pipes, which is around the edge, and the legs are kind of the legs that you'd have in a kitchen unit. And so it's kind of partly display, so you like the padded edge you'd have in a museum, but the material is kind of low tech. But they also have a kind of domestic, so they're kind of, it's on a presentational thing, but it's not anything that you know of, hopefully. But it has connections to things you might relate it to. And they're quite funny as well. They're kind of humorous in a funny way. You know, I think about some of your work, when it moves, it can slip into being humorous as well, you know. Like there's sort of just things like a bulb that's been decorated, and bits of masking tape and claws of a crab. And then this is just clay, and it's just painted, so nothing's really fired. It's all quite crappy. And then mixed in well things that I've bought, which don't have much done to them. It's a bit of wood that I got, and I've just put a plastic ball through it, you know. But I think it's quite interesting, some of the objects that we have at home, which are, they're no different to those, really. And when you start to really deconstruct them and look at them, they are quite ridiculous. And that scale of what I mean, that's when the piece of work I showed you before came in, and I was thinking, when you've got an ornament, what happens when it's the next scale up? Does that become a tabletop piece or a centerpiece?
Mm.
It's like, what kind of words can you use to an object which isn't a sculpture but isn't also an object, like a, you know, some of yours that actually has a function? So is it a figurine, a statue? I'm quite interested in that kind of those terms as well. Show the photographs of, just show you some of the pictures, because what I've also been doing with these is documenting them and then showing them as a series of small photographs, and then they have this other type of value. One, they all end up being the same size, and then they're kind of catalogued in some ways, and then you're also once removed from the materiality of them, so they almost become, the material becomes maybe more stable. So quite interesting what happens when they become a photograph. And there are things in there that don't exist in the installation because they are totally ephemeral. So there's, that one's got shaving foam on it, so clearly, and this one's got, although this could last, it's a really beautiful kind of porcelain jug that my gran left me, and then I've got blue tack bows on them. I've got this fascination at the moment of kind of using bows and ribbons, and not ribbons, but ideas of what a bow or something like that means, because they're so kind of tacky in some ways. But I quite like that awkwardness. Like, for example, this vase was a vase that my sister gave me for Christmas last year. It's horrendous. And I put this bow on it. But I quite like the idea of what a bow does to things. You know, they're weird things, though. It's like when you're wrapping your Christmas presents, we put bows on things. And I think that I find those objects really fascinating. And the more I think about them, the more ridiculous they are.
Well, the idea of putting a bow on something sort of creates, gives it an occasion. Almost, it's like instant sort of
that's
object,
it.
Occasional thing. So it's more important or something. So
yeah, that's
sort
of white teeth smiling.
Yeah. And I've started making bows and fans in clay, and then spraying them silver in the studio and putting those back on the wall, because again, they become really decorative. But then, I'm also interested in what happens when these materials become more permanent, because I have for a long time been working with materials that are very ephemeral, like this work that will go in the window with the tin foil can just be crushed up and thrown away. But I'm thinking, what happens when then that becomes permanent again? What happens when the whole thing gets cast in aluminium? I'm not quite sure what happens to that, but it's something I'm kind of considering.
Well, I think, like, are these objects or these works, they exist after they're exhibited, or...? Like these particular ones?
Yeah, I mean, these are photographs, so they absolutely exist. But the smaller objects kind of do. But what happens is I tend to make a lot of stuff, and then it goes to exhibition, it comes back, and it gets broken down a bit. Because these
and
are quite...
used for different pieces.
Yeah, like those objects that I showed you, which were slightly bigger, to keep them intact would just take up too much space, so they get reused.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always reusing things because I really like the relationship between... you know, a constructed or made or crafted or made crafted object in relationship to something I've just found. And it's often, the work only really often ignites when it's combined with other stuff. I think for the thing in the piece in the window, there's going to be this combination of these tinfoil object casts, but the things that they're constructed around, the armatures, are a series of different bits of furniture that I've gathered. And some of it will be quite revealed, and some of it will be quite covered. Like, we've got a couple of mannequins as well. Quite like the idea of absolutely using stuff that you find in a window in relationship to stuff. But you find anything in windows at the end of the day. But I quite like this sort of... it brings the object quite down to earth because it's actually just sitting on a table. So its baroqueness and its silverness and its presentation is slightly... I don't know, brought down to the here and now with something that's very normal.
Well, the way it's quite a formal presentation, once you put anything on a plinth or a table, it really is just a sort of act of presenting something to be viewed. So I think that's quite interesting in what you're sort of doing. You're collecting these objects and assembling them in a way of presenting to be viewed as sort of precious or...
Yeah, but I suppose the objects that I'm using are like armatures, so somehow all this tinfoil stuff will be, it'll become part of those objects it's sitting on. So they become like armatures, but the armatures will be revealed somehow. But it's interesting because I do often put over-present things or under-present them. It's almost like giving something more value by, often I make plinths that are really, really high, go up to the ceiling, and then other things that are just kind of left on the floor. Just show example things like that, where there's been kind of a combination of things that are over-presented and things that are just kind of on the floor. But this series of installations I did, which really mix a lot of the objects up, so there's things that are just found objects or things that are just wrapped up, like the plastic bag over the lamp, and then using materials, like I did a lot of clay, embedding paper and clay, that they almost become ethnographic, you know, there's this sort of object of meaning, and then plinths will just be wrapped up and disguised.
I was going to ask, because we were talking a lot about your selecting what's going to be within the different sculptural sort of assemblages that you're making, and with this project for the window, you've asked people to sort of drop their own things in, and I'm just wondering, what is that something you do before, or
no,
how does
I mean
that change things?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time that I've ever done that, and it's quite interesting about what, if someone's going to give something over, then maybe it's not as valuable as the thing that they keep in their home. So there's, I mean, it's just a different aspect of the work that I'm still kind of making sense of. I think what's quite interesting, that whatever that object is, when it's cast, it's going to have a different value or relationship to it, and then it's going to be part of something bigger. But the things that I gather tend to be really cheap, crappy materials, so they get elevated slightly. Whereas someone might bring an object in that's already, I don't know, maybe a metal, silver object, although I doubt if someone would give that over, because they'd be worried about losing it. And so if you cast that again, it might have a different... But whatever it does, it changes their relationship and the meaning and the value of that object. But I quite like that idea that, you know, you get, as an artist, you get so sometimes familiar with the things that you choose. Like when I was going around all the shops over the last couple of days, I had ideas of what I was looking for. And I was thinking, why am I looking for those objects? Why don't I look for other types of objects as well? Because whatever I cast will change the nature of that, and it will become ornamental because of the way that I'm putting this stuff together. So when someone brings something that I'm out of control with, it introduced something new, and I think that's nice. It's like you deal with something that's given, and it has made me think, because I'm doing a residency after Christmas, and I'm kind of been interested in the idea of people bringing things into the space that I might use. So it might be something that develops actually, and I quite like the idea of using objects absolutely in the way that they're thought, not being cast but just placed in relationship to other things, because I really like mixing things that are constructed, things are really crafted, and then things that just are placed. You know, it could just as well be this or that, you know, as well as something that are constructed. But it is something that has introduced something new, actually, which is good.
So is there like a link on this site to curated exhibitions as well? Is that exhibitions that you've curated? Or
oh, damn. Oh, yeah.
I'm just interested if, because it's not dissimilar activity to curation going on in the...
I mean, I think when you work with objects, I mean, the reason why I've ended up being the artist I am is because I've always been interested in the relationship to placement, which is why I've never really been totally an image making person. If I do make images, the images become very much objects. So I've just done a series of photographs, and the pinning of them onto the wall becomes really absolutely important. So if I curate a show, it becomes just as, you know, you're making similar decisions.
It's just this other thing, like, in people bringing you objects that you then have to work with.
Yeah, well, it is a kind of curation, isn't it? Yeah. But I think there's such a... I mean, it's getting to a point where, for example, there's the last exhibition of the Michelle Cotton, who's been a curator at Qubit. She's just had a show where she's pulled together all this sort of memorabilia and stuff to do with the... with logos, things like the London Underground and buses. So she's curated this show, but it's not... It's a piece of work. I mean, what's the difference between that and, you know, because actually it's a totally unique thing that she's brought together. It never existed anywhere else. And it's not artist work, it's memorabilia. So
yeah, I think something like the Russian Linesman.
Yeah.
Mark Wallenshire exhibition at the Hayward was a really great example of how actually amazing artist curation can be with
Absolutely.
You can kind of create this real visual essay.
Yeah.
Something that can present a thesis about the world,
yeah.
or where's to go, about history. And it's just interesting, I think, when artists are working with
yeah.
information as well, because that's something that's really.
Yeah, I remember there being a really good show when I think they did it a few times, Tastor Dean, it was at the Camden Arts Centre.
Mm-hmm.
And often you end up, it really reveals the artists, because it's like their curation, it's like parts of their practice, but none of their actual practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also really good to be doing it, because you end up discovering the components of your own practice,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it, so this was a piece, a show that I did, Wolf Road Project. So it's Phyllida de Barlow, Bettina Buck, me and Alison Wilding.
Is the carpet a piece of work, or is that?
Well, no, it's really funny. It was in this
okay.
really horrible this office block with this carpet, and actually, I quite enjoyed using it. And Phyllida loved it. She made the work specifically. She made the work for it. So these sticks were kind of thinking about the carpet and stuff. But it's. But initially it's like a nightmare, isn't it? You just think, how am I going to put sculpture on that? It's all the whole thing that came about for me, which is this piece here, it was about how I can lift stuff off the floor, really, because I knew the stuff that I was working with, the images, would not work on the floor. There was too much of a clash.
Looks like photocopies.
They're posters, basically. So what...
The carpet.
Yeah. It's funny, every single floor had a different colour. So upstairs was a blue, and I was on the grey floor, and it was V22 had taken over this building and invited curators, galleries, to put a show on each space that was open for a few weeks. No, thank you.
Thank you.
It was good, enjoyed that.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.